Good morning, Barcelona. Welcome to Thursday in English Radio on RKB 106.9 FM. I'm Virgil, always and still. And it's a great day. The sun is out, a little chilly, but it's still nice. It's wonderful. And like I tell folks, hey, I woke up this morning, and it beats a whole lot of other folks. So we're here and enjoying ourselves, and I've often said Barcelona is just like New York, only without the stress. And as the song goes, if you can make it here, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Obviously, you can make it here if you made it in New York. Well, as proof of concept for both of those points, joining us today is dancer, actress, teacher, entrepreneur, and New York homegirl, Naya Bowman. Welcome to the show, Naya.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Good morning, Barcelona.
Well, good. Now, many folks here have come for work or for love or for just passing through with plans to move on. You kind of have both your feet in Barcelona and in New York City. Mm-hmm. Now, how did these choices come about?
I did come to Barcelona for love. My husband is from here. We met in New York City on my sofa.
Don't run by that one so fast. You met your husband on your sofa.
Yes, in New York. He was friends with my roommate at the time. He's in advertising. And she said, hey, you know, I have a friend coming from Barcelona. He was in Hawaii and he wants to stop in New York. And she said, can he stay? I said, there's a sofa. I usually let dancers stay there. And so I woke up. There was a hot, beautiful Barcelonian Spanish man on my sofa, and we became friends. And I'm like, hola. He's like, hola. We had a lot in common. And then we became friends. Yeah. And then I always say he ruined my life, and we fell in love, and I moved to Barcelona.
And then you came to Barcelona.
I did. I came to Barcelona in 2010. Our plan was to come for 3 months. I always knew him in New York, so I was getting to know him and his family and hoping that his company would bring him to New York. That 3 months turned into 6 years and so on and so on and so on.
Okay, so you've been here since 2010.
Since 2010, and I go back and forth in New York. So because I'm a dancer, and unfortunately there's not a lot of dance in Barcelona, I do go back. I started acting here in Barcelona, actually, and which opened the door for me to another part of performing arts, which I love, which I found a Meisner's teacher here, Frank Faes, who now also teaches another type of technique, the Chubbuck technique. And so he opened the door for me to go into acting, and so I do a lot more acting here, and I teach dance sometimes here too.
All right, so now the acting that you're doing, is it stage work or is it TVs?
I'm open for whatever.
Whatever, yes.
But I do, right now, I do stage more in New York with the coach there, and then here it's a lot more commercial and some film here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
It's not. I can't complain, you know. I'm a New Yorker. We gotta hustle. We gotta figure things out.
Absolutely. Since you now have businesses on both sides of the Atlantic, where's your heart?
Oof. Oh, that's a good question. I always say my soul is in New York City. My heart is where my husband is, and so. Right now, we're in New York a lot more, and the more I come back to Barcelona, I love it. I did have a love-hate relationship here, which I'm sure a lot of us newcomers can understand coming to Barcelona. I don't know. I find, like, every time I come back here, I think my heart is here more. I don't know. I don't know if I'm just getting tired of the New York hustle or just every time I come back here, I get inspired by the city, just the architect and the art and the people, and then seeing my friends here who are just doing their thing and really just going against the norm of hey, I'm going to figure it out like a New Yorker. But I agree with you. New York City and Barcelona is a lot like there is a hustle here.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And so every time I come back and I see my friends that are hustling and making it work, And I think, like, well, maybe my heart is in my soul.
Well, yes, I've made that transition already. We'll be back to talk more with our guest right after this.
Shout it out, let it stay inside. I need you alive.
And that was Dance Little Sister by Terrence Trent D'Arby, with a little bit of an intro of jazz to kind of get you in the mood maybe for next week, whatever, because you know I love jazz. But anyway, going back to talk to our lovely friend Naya, dance really seems to be a principal part of really who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that start and evolve to what it is today?
It started when I was very young. I think I was five. My first memory is my mom had put me into a modern dance class at Henry Street on the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Henry Street Settlement House.
Yep, exactly, yeah. At the music school. And so it started from there. I think her grandmother, my great-grandmother, had told her she should be a dancer with those long legs, and you put her into dance. And so that was my mother's promise to my great-grandmother, and I fell in love with it. And so I went there. I went to Performing Arts Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Ailey in high school. I trained there. And I remember thinking about it. I never thought that I didn't know how to become a professional dancer. I just loved to dance and perform.
Okay.
And so I got into Rutgers at the art school for dance. And
And that's where you got the idea that you could make some money at this.
I didn't even get that idea until maybe I was in my 30s. Until one day, I think a financer said to me, you should get paid for what you do. And I thought, but this is for the craft, the art.
I love it.
And I was at Rutgers where, I actually wanted my mother to say to me, my dad was fine. He was like, whatever you want. My mother had to say to me, it's okay for you to be a dancer and not, she wanted me to be a nurse and she's a nurse and medical. And she's like, it's okay for you to be a dancer. And so when she said that, I just.
Okay. I mean, initially she wanted you to be able to provide for yourself and be able to have a secure career
right.
and all that.
Yeah.
And dance is hardly that.
Yes.
Now speaking of that, you mentioned that you still are going on auditions and everything.
Yeah.
So what kind of dance work is out there, either here or in New York?
Well, since my background is mostly in concert dance, right now I'm focusing more on commercial dance, which means like more Broadway work. I would love, right now my goal is to be part of a new show. Because I've always been in a company that we've always archived new work, old work. Somebody made the work. I'm redoing the work. But now I would love to be part of a show where I'm the first person that created that part. So here in Barcelona, it's really hard because, again, there's not a lot of dance here.
Mm.
And so when I'm here in Barcelona, I really don't think about dance. I think more of the acting part or teaching. And in New York City, it's hard. The hustle is hard because there are 1,000 Nayas.
Right.
And
all of them are good.
All of them are good. Are great. And I'm not one of those dancers that or people that is, nobody's better than me. The reality is, I'm good, but there's someone that's also good. And this, a lot of it is typecasting. And I'm a unique, awkward, I'm tall, big feet, long legs, long arms. And
Not traditional classical ballet dancer.
No, I'm not. And so, which I learned and still processing of how to say, okay, I don't fit in here. And also I asked casting directors, well, how do you see me here? I'd rather not waste anyone's time,
Good. Now, you spent time training with Alvin Ailey and Martha Graham.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about modern dance and maybe these two choreographers that really speak to you?
I grew up watching Ailey. I grew up watching the Ailey Company. They were my superstars. Mm. My superhero dancer was Donna Wood. Her picture is in my home in
Donna
New York.
Donna is fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yes.
She is the reason I wanted to be her. I have a photo of her in my home in New York. Everyone, they come in like, oh, that's you. That's a beautiful picture of you. And I go, that's not me. I didn't know how to be her. So when I was at Ailey, I didn't do Graham at Ailey. I always thought that was going to be my prize when I advance. So I did Horton Ballet and Dunham with Miss Joan Peters. So I'm never with the stick. And it wasn't until, and I always thought that Graham was a black, Martha Graham was a black woman because ALU is a black company. And
so she was black inside.
She, I think so. I think she, you know, the technique had has a lot to do with the back and using the torso, which is usually coming from a lot of different dances in the diaspora of the continent. So Graham, when I was at Rutgers and I was shown a video of her, and I said to a friend, "She's not a black woman," and he said, "No." So I ran to the library and I watched her video, "Dancer's World."
Okay.
And I saw Mary Hinkson. I said, "This is what I want to do."
Okay. Well, it's interesting though when you talk about Ailey and Donna Wood, I could almost envision you as a Judith Jamison.
Everyone says that.
Because body type, you know, you are kind of, you know, like her with the long legs and long arms and everything.
Yeah. I got that a lot. Yes. And I love her too. She's Miss Jamison is one of my idols also. Mm. I adore her. She's very hard.
Yeah. Yes.
When I was at this school as a kid and Miss Denise Jefferson, I remember her there too. And I didn't understand why the discipline was so important. I was still so very young as a kid. When I was there, I was afraid. Like, I remember that fear of being in class because I had no idea what was going on. Before I was just dancing for fun, but now I was going into something that was a lot different. But Judith Jamison is absolutely, yes, she cried the solo cry one day. That piece always is one of my favorites.
He made it for her.
He did.
And you've seen a lot of people who try to dance it.
Yes, I have.
And they can't do it.
No. In my opinion, no.
Even Donna Wood.
I saw her do it. I remember I loved her.
She brought a different kind of vibe to it. But Judith kind of owned the stage.
Right.
And it was really, she possessed it. Donna gave a little more softer technique. And do it. But, you talk about that and you talk about the modern dancers, the Ailey Company. And you think of the classical companies, and like Arthur Mitchell and the Dance Theater of Harlem.
Uh-huh.
In terms of trying to create a place for black dancers in the traditional classical world.
Yeah. I think it was last summer, no, two summers ago, I taught at DTH. And this experience was the first time that I stood in front of a classroom and I saw little Nayas. Beautiful, young, beautiful black girls, black, young, teenage black, little young ladies, young artists. And what also they're doing uptown in Harlem is, it's fantastic. And how also I do have to commend a lot to Misty Copeland, who also talks a lot about the race issue, about being a black dancer, especially a ballet dancer. And at DTH, also where they continue to perform, they continue to go forward to represent not only for young black girls, dancers, but anyone, that as long as you put in the commitment and the continuity and consistency, that you can become a dancer or whatever. And there are hard obstacles for black women dancers. I don't know about the men. I always say the men, they usually somehow get through there. But the women, the black woman dancer always, it is harder.
If you look at, Missy Copeland, who else is there?
Well,
in that same level.
Well, there's Michaela. I think her name is Prince. She's at the Dutch National Ballet right now. You have. There's also a few. There's another beautiful black dancer. She's actually older. She's now, I think, in her 50s, who dances here in Europe also. I wish I could remember her name. I want to say Myra, but I don't remember. There are a lot of dancers down in Texas. The thing with Missy Copeland is that she has the support from her company.
Well, yeah, ABT is...
They are amazing. And in my opinion, if companies really stood behind their dancers, they can. I mean, really stood behind their dancers and also talked about the race issue and change it, because it is about the market. But she has a really great backing. Her company really supports her, and so does that board, in my opinion. And I think that's really the most important thing.
It is. Well, we'll be talking a little bit more about this with Naya when we come right back.
Daddy always thought that he married beneath him. That's what he said. That's what he said. When he proposed, he informed my mother he was probably our very last chance. And though she was 22, though she was 22, though she was 22, she married him. Life with my dad wasn't ever a picnic, more like a come as you are. When I was 5, I remember my mother dug Eric out of the car. I knew that they weren't hers, but it wasn't something you want to discuss. He wasn't warm. Well, not to her. Well, not to us. But everything was beautiful at the ballet. Graceful men lived lovely girls in white. Happy at the ballet. That's when I started class. Up the steep and very narrow stairway to the voice like a metronome. Up the steep and very narrow stairway. It wasn't paradise.
It wasn't paradise.
It wasn't paradise.
But it was home.
Mother always said I'd be very attractive when I grew up, when I grew up. Different, she said, with a special something and a very, very personal flair. And though I was 8 or 9, though I was 8 or 9, though I was 8 or 9, I hated her. Now, different is nice, but it sure isn't pretty. Pretty is what it's about. I never met anyone who was different who couldn't figure that out. So beautiful, I'd never live to see. But it was clear, if not to her, well then to me. But everyone is beautiful at the ballet. Every prince has got to have his swan.
I mean, I was born to save their marriage. But when my father came to pick my mother up from the hospital, he said, well, I thought this was going to help, but I guess it's not. Anyway, I did have a fantastic fantasy life. I used to dance around the living room with my arms up like this. My fantasy was that it was an Indian chief, and he'd say to me, Maggie, do you want to dance? And I'd say, Daddy, I would love to dance.
But it was clear when he proposed
that I was born to help their marriage and wed.
That's what he said.
That's what she said.
I used to dance around the living room.
It wasn't warm.
Not to her.
It was an Indian chief, and he'd say, Maggie, do you want to dance? And I'd say, Daddy, I would love to. Everything was beautiful. at the ballet. I was pretty.
I was happy.
I would love to at the ballet.
And that was the cast from the musical Chorus Line with At the Ballet. It's one of those great, great moments in the theater that I enjoyed immensely. And kind of brings us back to what we were talking a little bit earlier with Naya. You know, as members of the audience, you know, we've, at least I have, seen this musical many times. And it resonated with me because it's had a phrase that everyone is beautiful at the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And yet your training and work have been part of an oeuvre where blacks, and especially black women,
mm-hmm.
were not seen as beautiful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We were just talking a little bit about that in the break.
Mm-hmm.
How's been your experience afterwards?
Let's see. Well, I have to say, firstly, I'm very glad that I did not grow up with the idea, like I had no idea. Like I went into dance of, I want to be a dancer. I just need to work on this. And it's about my talent. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s and going into my 30s that something was weird where, you know, I understand typecasting, which in my opinion is actually a nice term of saying discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And when I noticed, like, my friends were getting ahead, and I'm like, okay, they're shorter than I am, or they fit in. But then when I'm thinking, like, well, I know I'm good as them, but why am I, you know, everyone's giving me these great reviews, and I have all of this, but what is going on? And so I think the lack of privilege that I don't have is that I never had, I started to think, well, can it be because of my race? And I don't have that privilege of not thinking that.
Right.
And watching people going forward, and then my experience with, we need somebody to fit in. And, you know, I'm thinking like, and I always thought, okay, I got to work on my technique. We love the way that you look, and we love, you know, one person, it's not about your dancing. They want something softer.
And what does that mean?
What does that mean? And you know, and you're in this position of, I'm really confused because I'm thinking, well, my mom says I'm the softest of all her four kids. So my experience of, now I am saying, I do say it is this, and I'm very proud to say, okay, I'm the first to have done this. And also looking at, like, I've worked with the Graham Company and one of the teachers there part time, and my relationship there, and I look at, you know, there's a beautiful young girl that's coming up now, and she just did a really great role in leading. Doing a Martha Graham role as the first black woman. Mm. And I'm sorry. And I say, I know my sacrifice and the crying and the tears and you don't fit in and we need someone. I know I helped make that girl go forward. And she looks just like me. I call her little Naya. So I do. I call her. So for me, and even in auditions now, and where everyone is now doing this inclusive thing, where, you know, it's still what I, you know, like, I have to do my research. And if I have to look at, like, well, let me see, is there one black woman, you know, is there one black guy? And so I don't have that privilege of just going in. I remember someone told me, if they don't want a black girl, you change their mind. I say, well, that's hard.
Right.
You know, because image in someone's head changes so fast. So
changing hearts and minds are difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I know in my experience of dealing with in a situation where I was dancing and you know, and you come and someone comes to you and says and talks to you about your race. Oh, I remember another choreographer. Oh, be you. And then later, you know, you really stand out. I am 5'8" long legs. I kick really high next to a short girl. You know, yeah, I'm going to stand out. And I can't.
It's like dance small, right?
Dance small, yeah. And I'm tall. And so I'm like, okay, I can dance small. And then when I dance smaller, then it's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you dancing?
Right.
Well, I have long legs, and so, and I always have to look out for the short dancer. So yeah, it's that's my experience.
Well, you know, you talked also about dancing with the Deborah Zahl Project, yeah. In the Company of Women,
yeah.
Which were reconstructions of her dramatic solos,
yeah.
You know, that portrayed women from literature and history, and was danced by the Graham Company. You talked a little bit about this, but you know, what is that fine line you're walking between being a dancer and then a black dancer?
Mm. Well, with Deborah Zahl, she just passed away in December. And I called Deborah. Well, Deborah was there also another woman who, she just didn't fit in. I mean, you know, she just did her own thing. But she made a career of making these solos about white women in literature. And she wanted her legacy to be continued. And when two friends of mine from the Graham Company approached her, just talking and say, oh, I would love to do your solos, maybe 10 years ago. And she finally, 4 years ago, said, let's do this. And so she gave me the role of Mary Tyrone.
Okay.
And Mary Tyrone from Long Journey's Night, mm-hmm. Eugene O'Neill's. And she just said, she said to me, you have to be who you are. And so walking that means like you are a black woman. And Mary Tyrone, she said, I've done this piece in women's prison where there's all types of women. And everyone can relate to a woman who is desperate or has went through some type of substance abuse. Because Mary Tyrone, mm-hmm. she was an addict. And how as a woman you pick between your dreams and then your husband's dreams, and usually the wife, you know, has to give that. She did allow me to bring in my experience as Naya, as a woman, and as Naya who happens to be a black woman. But it's hard. It's hard for me not to just be myself. When I'm not comfortable in my own skin, I get in my own way, and it's very awkward for everyone. And there's this fear of, I do have this fear of not being accepted. Now what I have been working on a lot, because I really, for years, avoided doing pieces about black people, because it was more of like, well, I'm expected to do that. And now I'm just like, who cares?
Right.
I just also, Deborah Zahl had really helped me with, just being honest of who I am as an artist, and also helped me with archival, I just worked on archiving a Pearl Primus piece, and Pearl Primus is the first black woman who bought an African movement into modern dance,
right.
Which we have now, you know. And so I just reconstructed one of her pieces and performed it in December at the 92nd Street Y in New York, which is a huge hub for modern dance. And
it's a huge hub for culture in general.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
One of the things I wanted to touch on, you know, going back a few years, there's a play by Ntozake Shange. It's called For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough.
Yeah.
Series of monologues coming by dance and music, and she called it her choreo poem. Now, from your perspective as an artist, you know, did it have like impact on your career or your life choices at all? Did it speak to you in terms of what you were looking to do?
This piece.
For Colored Girls.
I learned about this piece in college. I think I had a black literature class, and I have this piece. these young girls are all so very different. And how, I mean, this is also part of, if I'm doing a piece or, and I can use this as my imagination to, my imagination to allow myself to go into a different world.
You're giving yourself permission.
Yeah, yeah. And it's part of my research because also this story, these poems are really about, you know, I think a lot of times, I know this for my friends and sometimes even my family, Naya's always going to be okay because she's so strong. And some partially that's my fault because I do have that persona. But this story about the vulnerability about these young Black women or girls is for me where I'm allowed to be vulnerable and human also. And yeah, and I think I've seen a company that used this piece. Maybe it was a Nina Simone song, but they use this also to perform it. And so I have to, sometimes I do have to remember, you asked me, I have to remember to go back to that I am human, that I do have these feelings of depression, of these feelings of being accepted. I know I do always have this. That is my biggest fear, I think, as a dancer coming from the background of perfection and you can't make mistakes, and now going into the acting world or the trying to get into the Broadway world, and the casting directors are saying it's okay to make a mistake, and I look at them and I said, what?
Right.
No, like I feel like it's a setup, you know, and they say, well, if you make a mistake you have to use that in your character, and so I still think it's a setup where like I
Well, it is in a lot of ways, because then you have to, then you're letting somebody else's opinion and judgment,
right,
you know, alter you and right, alter how you want to proceed on things.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's one of the interesting things that we're going to touch on a little bit later when we come back right after this.
Someone to want more of me, like making promises good in the daylight. The thing is, here am I, where is she? When is it my chance? Bells ring for me.
And that was a song written by my friend Charles DeForest, given to Tony Bennett to sing, called When Do the Bells Ring for Me? And I guess that's one of the things we started looking at, you know, as we've kind of alluded to, of being black in the world versus our professional lives and our personal lives. Now, one of the things that has kept me rooted in Barcelona versus the U.S. is that for the most part, I don't carry the same baggage of being black here as I do in the States. What's been your experience? You're still going back and forth between the two.
I feel in Barcelona, I feel in Europe, usually I always say that I do feel this a sense of different sense of freedom. Here, I remember like one time, it was 2006, I was stuck at the Heathrow Airport and I had to spend the night there. And I remember writing to my mom and she's like, well, you know, be careful. Remember, you're a black girl. And I said, no, I'm free here. Like, I don't feel that people judge me because of my skin color. I'm not saying I haven't experienced that here, because I have experienced my, you know, in the dance or, you know, here at the opera house or whatever. But there is something different. Like when I go on a casting call, I'm actually up against my friend who is Asian American or a Spanish actress. And we're all called in at the same time. And so it's really this huge smorgasbord of like, okay, let's see who fits into our idea better. Right. But I do feel like if I can get a taxi in New York, here in Barcelona, and the taxi driver is not swerving over to the other corner to pick up a white woman, which has happened to me,
right.
Yeah, I have a different sense of freedom here. I do, but I do get excited when I do see I don't know, my mailman is black, or my taxi driver here is Asian, because this is still a Spanish country, but it's just different. I do have this sense of freedom. The struggle here for me is not being black. The struggle here for me is that I'm not Spanish.
Right.
You know, right. And so then it's just a different club of like, yeah, you could come in, let's learn from you. And then, I do have this other, I don't have this in New York City. I mean, New York City, everyone says, oh, but it's New York and it's different. And I'm like, yeah, but it's America.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Right. Well, now, in addition to dance, you know, you've got entrepreneurial efforts that center around tourism. Tell us about that.
Well, I am a licensed New York tour guide in New York City. This started because when I, after college, I was teaching more than dancing and dancing in small companies. And I said, I don't want to teach. This is not what I want to do. I want to be a dancer. I said, I want to be in the Graham Company. And to do that, I had to go to the school. And they gave me a full scholarship right away. But I needed money. And I would see these double-decker buses in New York. And I said, oh, I can do that. I love history. Reading history is a hobby. I love talking. I could work on my public speaking. And then also I can teach at the same time. So I went to the double-decker bus, and they had medical insurance. That was the key thing. I found out that I was going to get medical insurance. And as a dancer in New York, and then, you know, this is in the States before the Affordable Care Act, I went to the double-decker bus. I had to take an exam to become a licensed tour guide in New York City. And I thought, I'm going to get this. I'm a native New Yorker. I'm from the Lower East Side. Got this. And so when I went to take the exam at the Consumer Affairs Department, the man that was the mediator, he said, did you study? I said, study what? I'm from New York with my New York. I was like, I got this. He said, you are going to fail. There's 250 questions. Go. I did fail the first time. And I had to come back 5 days later. I had to go on a tour to Suriname with its dance company. And I passed. And so ever since then, I've been doing tours. I started on the double-decker bus. I worked for small different companies for students that come into New York City from all of the states. And then I thought, you know, they're only showing them the tourist spots.
Right.
And this is, New York is more than that. So people began to ask me to help them build tours. I started a company of building tours, helping people find fun, and mostly with Europeans that come to New York, and I help them build a tour for their corporate companies.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
So have you ever thought of doing the same thing here?
Yes. So now that my husband is from here, and he is a traveler, he's a very good traveler. And one thing that we both enjoy doing is that when we travel, we like to learn about the culture. And so we like to immerse in it. And so here, what we do for New Yorkers that come to Barcelona, we do set them up with like an itinerary or tell them where to go. We do help them with some transportation. We do, like, one year our company brought in American kids here to dance, to team up with the school that was part of that, and to put tourism, how, because, again, going back to dance and how I like to create, or how I like to create a character, build my characters, I like to live like them or know or be inspired by them. And so you go out into the city and you learn the culture. A lot of modern dance was also very influenced by the Spanish Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of, especially when you talk about Martha Graham a lot of other modern dance pioneer or choreographers. And so tourism is really, like, we're very big on responsible tourism, where you do have to somehow get out there with the people, the natives, and, you know, come here to Barcelona. For us, we always say, just don't be a giddy. Don't come here and eat.
And go to McDonald's.
Please don't do that. don't go to McDonald's. Please just don't do that. You know, like, oh, I had McDonald's in Barcelona. No.
If you feel compelled, go to Hard Rock and buy a T-shirt. But, that's still stretching it. We'll be back for some closing comments right after this.
Thank you.
And that was Ben Vereen with Magic to Do, a song from Pippin, one of my favorite all-time shows. Now, some of the magic you do kind of focuses on inspiring young artists. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Barcelona International Dance Summer Intensive.
Well, that project was in 2015. And years ago, I wrote a curriculum for a high school in Brooklyn to build a dance curriculum. And so with that curriculum, it involved a lot of course, dance and performing, but also a lot of tourism. So in tourism, we did learning Spanish through costume designing.
Yeah.
So okay. My Spanish teacher here, who's also a costume designer, who's now in New York, trying to work as a costume designer. She jumped on board on the project. We teamed up with this school here, and they were a school that does a lot of, their teachers were Cuban trained ballet dancers, which is great. And so we bought in Graham, me, another friend, she's in Broadway, and then also a Tony Award winner, a choreographer, assistant choreographer, he came. And I like to help build young artists not only to learn how to dance, but the reason why you're dancing. Hmm. Everyone can kick their leg and stretch and leap, but then when you're given, especially in a ballet company or a company like Graham or Ailey, you're giving these characters, you have to also use your imagination. So they had to go out into the city, and we did do a lot of tourism in Barcelona, okay. And how you bring that in the class. We don't do it that much anymore. It was really hard. Unfortunately, a lot of the Spanish young artists here did not sign up. A lot of the people we had from their school were actually from Argentina. Hmm. And one of the kids, one of the choreographers, he had auditioned for the rock school year before, and he couldn't afford to go. And so we helped him get a full scholarship there. And they paid for him to be there. And now he's dancing for a ballet company in the States. I'm proud of that. Now what I do come to Barcelona. I do teach. I try to give scholarships. I just gave a scholarship to a young dancer from Slam Dance Academy, which is run by a woman who's from the States also. Her name is Susie Kellerman. And she has a really great program. She teamed up with this great school, which used to be Company, and they are now part of her. They've come together, and so she's doing a lot of great work because she's from, her background is dance competition, and she was through New York City. She's really training these kids how to now be competitive, not only in modern and ballet, but overall dance.
Well, obviously, you got a lot of hats that you wear and a lot of things you do. Now, if some of our listeners wanted to be able to plug into what you do and all the rest, how can they find you?
You can always find me on Instagram. I think that's now the best thing. Instagram at Naya Bow is NYABOW. You can also find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook fan page for students that you can find me at Naya Bowman. I do my best to post a lot. I do my best. But if you want to reach out to me and you just have questions, Instagram is always the best way to do it for me, because Instagram is just a lot easier. And Facebook. I have a website. You can find me at nayabowman.com. And then also you can find me, if you Google me, you can find me. But my website, nayabowman.com, is also a really great way to find me too. Yeah.
Well, really glad you came.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you again for the invitation.
My pleasure. And next week I'll be in D.C. At my day job doing cancer research. But taking out today is a Danish singer, Sanna Salomonsen, reminding us of the city that we love. Have a great one in Barcelona, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
dressed all in black. Down to the station, and he never came back. They found his clothing scattered somewhere down the track, and he won't be down on Wall Street in the morning. He had a home, the love of a girl. Get lost sometimes as years unfurl. One day he crossed some line and he was too much in this world. But I guess it doesn't matter anymore. In a New York minute.